Hey, what's up? Come on in. Hi, Big Jim. Big Jim O'Brien, host of Big Jim's Garage. I'm going to grab my beer here. It's actually coffee, but I'm being dramatic. Lots going on this week, man. We're busy. Kyle Larson's going to join us in just a second here. He's kind of busy. Trying to keep Kyle Busch happy and make it to the second round of the playoffs. So we'll talk a little NASCAR with Kyle Larson. Then I want to go back to an interview I did here in Detroit about 6 years ago. A.J. Bain wrote the book called Go Like Hell, which is all about Ford versus Ferrari. Yeah, you know, the movie, it's coming out in November with Matt Damon and Christian Bale playing Ken Miles. A.J. wrote this amazing book that always read like a movie, and, of course, they did turn it into a movie. But it's... This happened, the interview was the week after Carroll Shelby had passed away. And during the interview, you'll hear A.J. talking about some amazing stories with Carroll and also the process that he was going through trying to shape the book into a movie. If you remember, the original casting for Carroll Shelby was Tom Cruise. That was the rumor. And then it wound up being Matt Damon, different company and everything else. But the movie has finally come to fruition. So A.J. Bain and Kyle Larson, we got a lot to touch on today. Let's get going here. Is that Kyle?
There you go.
Is this Mr. Spin and Win? Kyle, how are you?
Yeah.
Mr. Spin and Win, man. That was the greatest ending to a race I've ever seen, dude.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Did you know, I've put the video up on our website here in Detroit, Kyle, and showing people, like, in the moment, are you just laughing, horrified, or just like, that's racing?
I wasn't horrified at all. Yeah, I was laughing, I guess. And just being like, oh, wow, that was nuts.
Because I always wonder, and by the way, thanks so much for
nobody
the time.
Nobody did anything wrong or dirty, I didn't think. So, yeah, it was just racing.
But that's what you want, right? I mean, in any series, you want to see, as a fan, that's what I want to see. And that's, to be honest, it's what I love about this year. It feels like, and tell me if I'm wrong, you guys really look like you're hanging it out there more than you ever have on the track.
I mean, I wouldn't say that, but yeah, I mean, I guess with it being harder to pass, maybe we're more aggressive than we've ever been. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like all of us always drive hard.
But, like, when you're talking about I've heard before, and you know, folks have said, like, so when you pull out on somebody to pass them, Kyle, is it kind of like that parachute feeling? How can you describe that when you get up to someone, but you can't get by them?
Well, you just stuck in their wake, kind of behind you. I mean, you have, like, when nobody's in front of you, you have a lot of downforce. But, you know, now that we have such big spoilers, you know, when you're behind somebody, you don't have great downforce. So your car's sliding around more. It's not handling how you need it to when you're behind somebody. Where before, when we had a shorter spoiler, you know, there wasn't as much turbulent air, so you could still get decent, you know, handling on your car.
Do you like this new package overall, though?
I've grown to, I guess, not dislike it. I would say early on, I mean, I think I was just bitter towards it because, you know, everything I've grown up racing is high horsepower and really no downforce. So this is totally opposite of what I've grown up doing. So I think it just took some getting used to. And, you know, now that I guess you do it week in, week out, you just get used to it and you just understand it's not going to change and you quit complaining about it.
Well, you've got two more races left before we get to the first cutoff point. And Richmond this weekend, it's been a good track for you. Is there a reason you think you do well at Richmond?
Well, honestly, I feel like we're not that great there. I mean, I know we've won a race and we've been second maybe one other time.
Right.
But other than that, we've been pretty average here. So it's kind of a hit or miss track for us. Sometimes we're good, sometimes we're average. So don't really know what I'm ever going to get before I get there, but hopefully this weekend we're better.
With NASCAR, Kyle Larson's with us here, man. When you guys get the car off the trailer and you get to the track, how big of a swing can you take at it? Will you know what you got on Thursday or Friday and you're like, we got a middle of the pack car? Because I hear you guys more and more say, I had a fifth place car, I had an eighth place car, I had a tenth place car.
Yeah, I mean, you're hoping every week you can unload off your truck and be really good in practice, because it makes the whole weekend a lot easier, and you know you're going to be good. But, yeah, there's some weekends when you unload and you're not good, and you know, sometimes you can work on it really hard throughout practice and get better. But, you know, these days there's not a whole lot of practice. You know, we have 2 55-minute practices normally, which is about an hour less than we used to have, and that's even less than it used to be before I got in the sport. So you just don't have as much time to work on it as much as you used to, and that just makes it tougher, you know, when you don't unload where you need to be.
So if God forbid something happened where, like, you can't drive NASCAR anymore, let's say some rule came out, like, oh, Kyle Larson can never drive NASCAR again, would you be totally happy going back to sprint cars and just driving dirt for the rest of your career?
I mean, that's always my backup plan. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be happier, I guess, but I would still be a happy person. But I enjoy doing what I'm doing right now, so hopefully that day is a long ways down the road.
Oh, I know, and that's one of the things Matt Yoakam and I were talking about you last week, as a matter of fact, and we're talking about you're just fun to watch on the track. It seems like you're competitive, obviously, and when you're out there, but it seems like you're pure joy. When you're racing, how do you describe it for me? Because I'm just a dude who likes to drive a car fast, but you are a professional driver who drives a car fast. What's it like out there?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's fun. It's the competition, the speed, the friendships made from racing. It's all just really fun. So, you know, it's all I've really grown up doing, and it's something that I was good at an early age, so I fell in love with it. And, yeah, I mean, I think just being able to go, well, I mean, I race a lot of different stuff, but NASCAR, I mean, you're going, 185 mile an hour, and you're inches next to people, and, inches off the wall, so the sensation is pretty unreal. It's hard to describe it or compare it to anything else, because for your normal fan, they'll never get to experience anything like it. So, I mean, you can go down the road at 100 miles an hour. You shouldn't, but you can go down the road at 100 miles an hour, and you're going half as fast as what we are. So, it's just, you can't really describe it.
That's what's, I guess that's what I was getting at, Kyle, is like when, As the guy sitting there watching you race, like I will, this at Richmond Saturday, sometimes I think with TV we lose perspective. That's why I always tell people, you got to go to a race. You have to go to a race to really understand what you guys are doing. So you got Richmond, you got the Roval, and then our friends at Dover as well. So let me ask you a question, Kyle. If it came down, if I come to you and go, okay, Kyle Larson, you get a race for the championship. I don't care what other three drivers, but what track if you get to pick, what track would you run?
I'd leave it at Homestead.
Would you really?
That's my best track. Yeah, that's my best track. I know we haven't won there, but I've dominated a lot of races there, and I've led a ton of laps to that place. So it just suits my style, where you can run right next to the wall and make a lot of speed doing that. So I would leave it there, but. So, I mean, this is last year that the championship race will be there, so I really got to take advantage of the playoffs this season.
Is it more important to win? This is a silly question. Is it more important to win or stay out of trouble in the playoffs?
I think it's more important to stay out of trouble. And then, if you're staying out of trouble and contending for wins, those wins will come. So, you don't want to ever have to put yourself in that position where you have to win to make it to the next round. You want to be able to top five or top 10 your way each week and do it that way, I guess. But, if you can get a win, obviously that makes it easier, because you automatically go to the next round. But the winning is extremely tough. A lot of those guys make it look easy, but it's not easy. And, because of that, you need to be consistent at the same time. So I try and go for consistency, but obviously we all know that winning is the ultimate thing to get you going in the playoffs and get you to the Homestead.
I always think about Ayrton Senna in Monaco when they told him to take it easy when he was way out in front, and then he wrecked the car. And it's like, you guys, You have to be on the edge to do what you do. And if someone tells you just to take it easy, I'm amazed that you guys can find the balance, the awareness to stay out of trouble and still be so competitive to get up front.
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes you're comfortable at 100%. When you pull back, that's when your rhythm gets thrown off and you make mistakes. So, I prefer to just run hard all the time, because then you get into a rhythm of that.
KyleLarsonRacing.com, Kyle Larson Racing on Twitter, of course. Chip Ganassi Racing, number 42, the Credit One Bank Camaro ZL1. You're eighth right now, man. I expect big things from you. We will see you at Homestead competing for the championship, right?
I hope so. Thank you.
Dude, it was great. Kyle Larson, thank you, sir. There it goes. Hey, shout out to our friends at Dover International Speedway as well, helping us make that possible. DoverMotorsports.com. Dover is just one of those tracks. It's so much fun. And that's going to be the first race of the second leg. You got it? So there we go. When we get into our Xfinity series here. So there he goes, Kyle Larson. I really do wonder about that. I mean, if you've never seen the movie Senna, maybe you didn't know what I was mentioning to Kyle there, but it's a beautiful documentary, and most drivers have watched it multiple times. Seriously, it's one of those things. And it's not about how he died. It's about how he lived. And I know that's cliche as hell, but it's true. And it's an inspiration for anyone, how Ayrton Senna lived. But there was a point where he was the most dominant driver, and he destroyed Monaco in Formula One. And they told him, take it easy, you're up by almost a lap. He lost a little bit of focus, and I'm pretty sure he wrecked like within a lap. Just stuck it in a wall. And so you think about that focus in life, man. But these drivers, I don't know how they – when we were watching that race in Vegas, they are on the ragged edge. And again, I don't think television gives it justice. I don't think TV sometimes can show you what they're doing. We go to we're recording this here in the Motor City in Detroit, and you go out to MIS and watch a race at MIS. When they come off turn two at MIS, they're doing what, a buck 80, a buck 90? And they're – like Kurt Busch is nuts. Kurt Busch is Looney Tunes when he comes off there. These guys drive so damn hard, pushing these cars to the very limit, and maybe they don't see it sometimes like we do as fans. But again, at NASCAR, go to a race. Go to any race, dirt racing, whatever it is, man. Kyle Larson, he's the guy that actually I picked to win the whole thing too. Matt Yoakum's going to be mad at me now because he thinks I'm playing favorites. Yeah, I am. All right, now we're going to switch gears. Yeah, I know. Pardon the pun. Come on, man. I'm drinking beer. I mean, coffee. Again, painting pictures, words. So we go from Kyle Larson to AJ Baim, one of my favorite authors, great guy too, and a huge fan of racing, obviously, by writing the book Go Like Hell, which is about Ford versus Ferrari in the 60s, which is the inspiration for the movie Ford v. Ferrari. Now, Go Like Hell is so popular here in Detroit. How popular is it? They were giving the book out to Ford executives and people who work at Ford as motivation about what you're capable of. Seriously, he's a rock star here, man, and all over. This interview goes back about 6 years when Carroll Shelby had passed away. It was the week after. And we talked about Carroll, and we talked about the book, too. But it's interesting. Just take a couple seconds and listen. AJ Baim discussing the life of Carroll Shelby and discussing the movie plans back then as well. Now, your connection to Carroll Shelby when you started writing the book about the battle between Ferrari and Ford in the 60s and the Ford GT, tell us how that all started.
Well, it's an interesting story for me. It touches a nerve. I had sold this idea to a publishing company to write this book about Ford versus Ferrari, the battle for Le Mans, and the golden age of racing in the 1960s. And I'd signed this contract. They paid me, and I hadn't gotten the interview with Carroll yet. And I was nervous, as you can imagine. And so I showed up for a dinner where I knew he was going to be, and I sat next to him, and I said, "Hey, Carroll, blah 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 blah," and he was so amazing. I'm sure he gets asked for these interviews all the time. He invited me to his office 2 weeks later. I was in his office. We talked for hours, and we had a relationship. He just started to call me on my cell phone all the time. He just wanted to talk about these amazing stories, and they are amazing.
And you talk about, his connection here to Detroit, obviously, not only Ford and Chrysler and everything else, but when he was being brought here by Henry Ford II, paint that picture. I mean, Carroll at the time was a champion race car driver who was trying to start his own company, right?
Well, it's the ultimate underdog story. That's what I love about it. He was, this amazing racing driver in the 1950s, and he raced a lot in Europe. And really, the audience in America hadn't turned on to the thrill of European motorsport. That happened right about the time when Phil Hill won the world championship, the only American to this day to win the Formula One World Championship. That was 1961. Now, American opened its eyes to the thrill, the glamour of racing in Europe, and that's right when Carroll had to retire because of this heart condition. So he was broke. He was divorced. He had no money, and he everything going against him, and he started this company to make a car called the Cobra. And, of course, we know what happened after that.
And then when he was here with the Ford GT, but the Ford GT was really, it was him and Lee Iacocca were kind of tasked to go beat Ferrari's butt.
It's amazing, you know, when you think about like Henry Ford II, you know, where you live in Detroit and where I try to be as much as I can, you know, this man is a legend. The power of this man and the money, and he really represented America and capitalism and power and money and drive, if you will, in every sense of the word. For him to put this whole program in Carroll Shelby's hands was an amazing thing, because Carroll, you know, yeah, he was successful with the Cobra, but he was still, you know, kind of a who the hell is this guy? And I've been working with some scriptwriters on the film version of Go Like Hell, and this is something that we're really working on to just sort of explain so viewers understand, like, what an underdog he was. And so when we win in the end, people understand what an amazing achievement it was for Carroll and the men who worked with him.
I always look at the Ford GT, and I was over at Roush last week, as a matter of fact, to do an appearance there, and looking at the current GT and thinking about the GT40 of almost 50 years ago, and you look at that car, it's still as cool today, just like the Shelby Cobras. They're still as cool today as they were then, and I don't know a lot of cars that you can put in under that umbrella.
Well, you know, that's one of the thrilling things about the 24 Hours of Le Mans. To me, this is still the greatest race in the world. I'll be on the broadcast this year with the Speed Channel. And when one of the things that this race does is it's a venue in which car manufacturers display not just, you know, a car that can prove to the world stage that a certain company is the best engineering in the world, but also the beauty of cars, the beauty of these racing cars. And, of course, in the 1960s, that's when it really, you know, to me, that's when it never got more beautiful than that. And the GT40, 40 inches high, it was like a huge V8 engine. It was like this beautiful fist flying down the road.
Do you think Carroll Shelby was – how would you describe him? Would you say he was more of a creative guy or an engineering guy? Was he left or right brain?
I think he was more of a creative guy, and I think his talent was getting the guys around him, guys like Phil Remington and Ken Miles, you know, development drivers and engineers who were truly brilliant, uneducated men. You know, that's one of the things that the Ford executives were so surprised. They said, Carol, these guys aren't college educated. These aren't real engineers. And of course, Shelby was the showman. He convinced everybody that these underdogs could do the job. And of course, they did. They won the 24 Hours of Le Mans, the first American manufacturer to do so in 1966. And the team was called Shelby American Ford.
So he even had title over Ford. That's pretty strong. I can't remember the race, and I apologize. We're talking to A.J. Baim, and the book is Go Like Hell, and you've done so much research about Carroll Shelby, who passed away last week. Was it 54 Carrera Pan America in Mexico? Is that the one where he wrecked, broke his arm, and got drunk with a bunch of Indians?
I believe it was.
Okay.
He writes about this. Shelby did an autobiography. It was, you know, ghostwritten, and I think the book came out in 65 or 66, pretty early on. And he covers that all in, you know, this chapter of wrecking and breaking his arm and these Indians, you know, the way he tells the story, you know, Carol, he could tell a story. These Indians took him in, and he had to, you know, they got him drunk, and he was delirious and in the middle of Mexico, and nobody knew where he was. And he did have some, I think he had some surgery on that arm, but of course, you know, he came back.
It was also the sort of ladies' band that I'm always hearing the story that one time that he wrecked, he was taken in by a couple of teachers who were there watching the race, and he decided to just skip the ambulance for a while.
Yeah. That was Doesn't surprise me. I mean, this was a man, somebody said about him, you know, you've heard this saying, he could talk the leaves off the trees. He could, he was truly, truly charming till the end.
Who do you see playing him in the movie?
Wow, geez, I can't really talk about that, but we're working. I'm supposed to meet with these guys out in L.A. next week, and fingers crossed that the project keeps moving. I know Carroll was very interested in seeing it happen because he liked the book and he liked the script, and, you know, it really told the story correctly, as he says. I don't know who's going to be, but somebody, it's big shoes to fill, let's say.
Well, you and I have known each other for a couple of years, and I've said it from the first time I read this. It's very few and far between that I read a book that reads like a movie, and Go Like Hell is exactly that. It is the definition of a page-turner. I've read it probably three or four times. There's some things in my catalog for automotive things. I watch Le Mans, I watch Grand Prix, I watch Senna, and then I read Go Like Hell. That's just one of those books you got to read.
Well, geez, I worked so hard on that thing for so many years, and I was so lucky to be able to get the interviews that I did, first and foremost, Carroll Shelby. But I really appreciate you saying that.
I keep coming back to the same thing. For you got to spend time with Carroll Shelby. I mean, you got to get to know this guy. I mean, he was an icon in motorsports, but I mean, just the definition of pardon Kid Rock for saying this, but an American badass. This guy was just revered by everybody, wasn't he?
He was. And my favorite Carroll story, Shelby story, is, when I went for the first time that I visited him in his offices, we sat for a couple hours and I just had the tape recorder on and I would show him old newspaper articles because they would spark memories and show him pictures of people, specific people. And he said, I haven't thought about that guy in a while or whatever. But my favorite moment, we had this after a couple hours of talking, he insisted on driving me to the airport. This is actually the last page of the book of the epilogue. And his secretary was like giving me the eye, like, Carroll has a problem with one of his eyes. He doesn't see that well. Next thing I know, we're hammering down the road in a big Shelby Mustang. And he's weaving in and out of traffic and passing people on the shoulder. And I'm like, oh, my God. But he still had it. He still had that skill in that left foot and that right foot. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, yeah, he could probably drive it either or. Is that good? Well, it's Carroll Shelby is just going to be fun. Real quick, my story, AJ, is always the same one. When he came back to Ford and he was at the auto show 5 or 6 years ago, I think, when they brought back the Shelby and they brought him in and he was, they sat him down, they brought him in a cart for the media day tour. And I looked over and all the car designers who were from all the makes and models were lining up like kids waiting to get their autograph from a baseball player. They all wanted to go over and say hi to him. And it was just amazing to me see that these people who were the best of the best automotive designers in the world all wanted to go shake Carroll Shelby's hand. I mean, that's as high praise as you can get.
I agree with you. And the wonderful thing is that, Carroll has passed on and there were so many people who loved him and respected him and idolized him. But the great thing is that even though he's gone, he will live on in these automobiles that some say his name and some don't. But and some of the greatest racing victories in the history of America – to have the name Shelby on them. So he'll be with us forever.
That's how you feel. I mean, so you just took the question right out of my mouth. I mean, that is when someone says, what is Carroll Shelby's legacy? It is.
Well, it's the Shelby Cobra. It's a Shelby Mustang. You have these three-dimensional sculptures that people are going to be driving around forever. And then, for the people who really love it, they'll dig into the books and they'll go back and find out why this man was so famous. And that's because of racing victories.
Does Ferrari acknowledge Carroll Shelby at all?
No.
In his passing, do you think Ferrari would ever acknowledge what he did?
Well, I don't know, because the guys at the factory now are far removed from Enzo Ferrari, who tried to get Shelby to join his team on more than one occasion, and Shelby always said no. And why that is, we can go into for a long time. But the Ferrari drivers during the 50s and 60s had a knack for ending up, 6 feet under. So I don't think there was a lot of love there.
AJ Bame, again, the book is Go Like Hell. Good luck with the movie and everything else potentially, and it'll all work out well. And I know you're busy. I appreciate you taking time out to talk about Carroll Shelby. Thank you, buddy.
I thank you. I will always make time for your show, Jim. Take care.
There you go. AJ Bame there. The author is of the book Go Like Hell. And the guy, really, without that book, you don't get the driving force part of the car pun for Ford v. Ferrari. There's more to that story about Ford versus Ferrari. That interview's about 6 years ago after Carroll Shelby passed away. AJ is a great guy. By the way, Arsenal of Democracy, his book about Truman, one of the best writers going right now. In a lot of ways, I compare him to David Halberstam. He's that good. Thanks to Kyle Larson as well. Told you. Busy, busy. Busy, busy, man. Lots going on here. Thanks so much for stopping by the garage. Clean up when you leave. Take your cans with you. I don't recycle. If you want to touch and get a hold of me, that didn't sound right, but I'm going to run with it anyway. At WCSX Jim, that's my Twitter handle. We do a show here in Detroit on the old terrestrial radio, Big Jim's House. That's me. Love cars. I got to wrap up with something I want to talk about. I just saw this list, and I started thinking about it. They had this list, the best new cars for teens. U.S. News and World Report did this. So you're looking for something on a budget, right? And one of the cars they talk about is the Hyundai Accent. Now, I spent a week driving the Hyundai Accent. Now, just to give you an idea, they call me Big Jim because I'm 6'5". Okay? And I'm a big dude. But that was one comfortable, comfortable ride. And it was funny because I kept thinking to myself, this is the perfect college car. This is the perfect first car. And you're getting into it around $20,000. I had the SE. I totally get it. And those sort of accolades, I will admit, sometimes we get obsessed with getting the biggest and best car, and we don't take care of the entire audience. Not everybody can go out and get that. It's like watching Top Gear, remember? When it was good. And you would look, and you're like, cool, I'm never going to have that car. Cool, I'm never going to have that car. The Hyundai Accent SE, what a great car. What a great car. I remember my first new car was a Chevy Spectrum. You're laughing, aren't you? Yeah. So, again, Hyundai Accent SE, amazing ride. Amazing ride. Absolutely loved it. And it's nice to see it getting the sort of acknowledgement that it deserves. Again, if U.S. News & World Report says it's true, it's got to be true. Best new car for teens. And if you're looking to save some money, I would take a look at that one. All right, we're out. Still more to come, but that's it for now. I'm going to go get another beer. It's actually coffee, but again, I'm being dramatic. Come on, man.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.